Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about Poetic Justice, an outreach writing program for the women incarcerated at the David L. Moss Criminal Justice Center, the Tulsa Jail. Two writers and teachers, Ellen Stackable, an English teacher at the Tulsa School of Arts and Sciences, and Claire Collins, a teaching artist from the Oklahoma Literary Arts Alliance, started the program about 18 months ago. Well, the response from the incarcerated women has been overwhelming, and now they feature four teachers. And one aim of the program was to give these women a voice, build some self-worth and a sense of empowerment. It has also resulted in some honest, poignant, and introspective poetry. That work is now a part of Poetic Justice's first anthology. This anthology, with wit, heartbreak, and sober reflection, gives readers a small sense of the realities of incarceration. Proceeds from the sale of the anthology will help fund the program and expand it, hopefully, to other correctional facilities as well. BookSmart Tulsa is hosting a book release party tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at Dwelling Spaces at 119 South Detroit, with readings and information about Poetic Justice. Poetic Justice Program Director Ellen Stackable is my guest today. Ellen Stackable, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Tell us a little bit about how Poetic Justice began. How did you begin working with incarcerated women at David L. Moss?
It had been something that I had wanted to do for a long time. And several years ago, I tried to find a way into the system, which is sort of a labyrinth, and never really figured out anything. And then one of my colleagues at Tulsa School of Arts and Sciences, Dan Hahn, came to school one day and said he was teaching poetry at the jail. And I said, what? What? So the next week I went and visited, and they were doing Just Men. And I asked if there was a women's class, and he said no. And that's when I met Claire Collins, who was helping with the men's class. She's a local spoken word artist. And we both decided we would start one in the women's section and got in contact with Sherry Curry, who works with women there. Wonderful person. And she actually came with us a few times because you have to have somebody who's badged to go in. And then we just started. And I think we kind of felt like we were under their radar for a while.
And what was the turnout at first? Were the women receptive to this, or was it a sort of a process of seeing this as something worthwhile?
No, it was never a process. It was tremendously popular. And we did it in the pods. We were the only class like that. Most of them were in the education wing, which means only a certain group of women can come to that. But in the pods, everyone can come. And so we almost always had full house every week, and sometimes people who wanted to come and there wasn't enough room.
Was it a matter of they wanted to write, or was it a matter of I'm looking for something to do to pass the time, or a mixture of both?
Maybe a mixture of both, but I think there were a couple times when Claire actually did a couple of her pieces, and that was immensely popular. And it was clear that we were not someone that they normally saw in the pods, because who goes in there is like Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, and different Christian ministries. And so we really don't fit in any of those paradigms. So I think they were curious about that.
And then, and you're offering something, but if you don't want to do it, that's fine.
It
was like, it's not like there's this sort of quid pro quo going on.
No, and it's, I think, one of the few things at the jail where they're not being talked at. We're listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of our hard and fast rules is that we check ourselves before we go to the jail. We check ourselves at the door because we're there to serve and to listen, you know, not to talk at them.
So I assume from the very start, it sounds like this was sort of a popular program.
Yeah. And the Stacy Holloway, who's in charge of education there, Sergeant Stacy Holloway, told us it was the most popular program at the jail. And so she's been a real advocate for us, really kind of had our back in the whole last year and a half.
Does it start out each year where you're starting out by reading poetry, or are you having people write from the very beginning?
We have them write from the very beginning. I'd say most of them have never done it in their lives. And increasingly, I think what I've realized is these women are voiceless. They've never felt like someone listened to them. They never felt like they were people of worth. The vast majority of women who are in jail in Oklahoma have been abused physically or sexually. And almost all of them are there for nonviolent crimes. And so they're missing their kids, they're missing their families, they're ashamed that they're there, and they're very eloquent when they write. I think that's the part that surprised people the most. I think your typical image of someone in jail is that they're there because they're ignorant or they're illiterate, and we haven't found that to be true in the classes at all.
And really, the poetry in this collection, Poetic Justice, this first anthology, which you're hoping to sell to help raise funds to actually expand this to more than just David L. Moss, to some other correctional centers as well. It's really interesting. The variety of poetry is very wide. As you would expect, some of it is incredibly poignant and some of just heartbreakingly sad, but there are others that are funny. And you can just see the motives that are at play. Some of it's about the incessant time that you're, you know, what you do with this time where you're here stuck in a place all day, 24 hours a day. Others about making amends, of re-examination of their life and what they've done so far, their predicament, lamenting their predicament that they're in at that particular point. Really a wide variety. Tell us about the process for helping find these women find their voice. Does it take long?
Well, we set up real clear guidelines at the beginning, and the first thing we establish is safe space. They are in a place that is just, most of them have come from lives that are unsafe, and the jail is certainly not a safe place. And so we ask them, what does it mean to you, a safe space? And they almost always say, what we write here stays here. What we say here stays here. You know, that I'm free to read without being criticized. And so establishing that safe space is really helpful. And then we have moved more and more towards, we do something called sensory restoration. If you're a woman in David L. Moss, you never see the outside if you're in the pod.
You don't go outside at all?
No, not at all. There's a room on one part of the pod that's a concrete recreation room, and it's literally four concrete walls, concrete floor, and about 25 feet up is a grid that's open to the air. And there are women who've been there months, and that's all they see of the outside.
Wow.
So we do essential oils at the beginning, and we usually do just sort of a short meditation. And then we establish our ground rules, and then we usually give them some kind of a prompt or a starter to start writing. And then when they write, instead of standing up at the front like teachers, we walk and we're part of it. We write with them. We sit with them. It's all in a circle. It's not classroom style. And so I think the physicality of all that says you matter. You're a person of worth.
Yeah. Now, in the collection, there's a number of poems which I noticed there was a similarity to What It's Like. What It's Like. One is Prison Life, What It's Like to Be So Far Away, What's It Like to Be Old and Gay, What's It Like to Be Married to a Bad Cop, and also What You Would Find at one is called What You Would Find at My Mossy Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume these are sort of stylized prompts that get them writing.
Yeah, and we're moving away from that a little bit, but how we started in the first year plus was we took poems from established poets, like What It's Like to Be a Black Girl, for those of you who aren't, is from Patricia Smith's poem, and then The Letters to Younger Self are from a poem that a local Oklahoma City poet, Lauren Zeninga, wrote called Dear Lauren Berry, and it gives them sort of a scaffolding that they can then step into with their own story. And so what we've been trying in this last few weeks is not having those, and we're still seeing powerful writing.
And, you know, there's also some really funny writing, too, which is might surprise people, but I'm going to read a poem here from this. This is from L.S., excuse me.
Yes, L.S. We just put initials.
Right. And it's called An Ode to Noodles. Noodles for lunch, noodles for dinner, and yet I wonder why I'm not thinner. Orange sporks, plastic bowls, a tummy full of noodles and rolls start to grow. So many choices, yummy they are. Once a medium, now an extra large. I eat them crunchy. I like them like that. And now when describing me, they use the word fat. I'm thankful for noodles. It's crazy, I know. But late at night, they comfort the soul. What? This beef? I ordered chili. Arguing about noodles is really quite silly. I like noodles. I like them a lot. And sometimes in jail, it seems all you got.
And it almost sounds Dr. Seuss-like,
doesn't it? Does, it does.
Can you just see it?
Yeah, I know. But that was what was surprising. But really, the ones that really touch you in this collection are obviously people who are sort of looking over their lives, reconciling. I mean, it sounds like you're doing some important work where they're really reconciling what put them in this position. And a lot of times it's through a chain of events that started that was no fault of their own. I mean, abuse. You're reading some pretty horrific stories of abuse, of family members abusing other family members and somebody sticking up for them. It's just really, really quite touching.
Yeah, the first few months we went, there's now five of us that teach at a time. And for a while we questioned, is five people being there with 25 women too many? But what it gives us is every woman who comes to the class has personal time with each one of us. And that's just a further affirmation of their worth as human beings. And I think the first few months when we went, we would get nervous before we went, you know. And Claire had her own set of fears. I had my own set of fears. But anymore, honestly, I feel it's one of those unique times where I know when I go, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be at this moment, at this time, and I feel completely comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we all feel that way. We always end the class by thanking the women there and saying, it is a privilege to be here. Thank you for letting us come.
That's probably one of the only times they hear that.
Yeah.
So how long does the class last? Do you have people who are there on a long-term basis that are, like, showing up?
Yeah, fair and speedy trial.
No. I mean, you're talking about people, if you're waiting a trial, you can wait as long as a year.
It's true. There's some women that have been there almost 2 years. And so our class lasts 5 weeks. We switch pods every 5 weeks. There's three pods with women at David L. Moss, and each one has about 90 to 100 women in it. And so we'll have it at the pod for 5 weeks, and the fifth week we have a graduation ceremony. We didn't do that first, and they asked us to do that. And for a lot of them, it's the first time they've ever had a graduation in their lives. So we have certificates and shake their hands, and then we type up all the poetry they've done in that particular class, and a local printer helps us print it off, and we tell them they're published poets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really affirming. And so it's a 5 week class, and then we rotate the pod, so we get to it every 12 weeks.
And you'll see some of the same faces show up time and time again because they're still awaiting trial or waiting or serving time there.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it's what I didn't realize before I went was how small a charge some of these women have, and they're right next to, in the pods, people who were there for first-degree murder. You know, there was a woman one time who was there for jaywalking. She was picked up for jaywalking, and then they added onto it riding her bike without a light. And then they added onto that, I think, resisting arrest, which, you know, it's really unclear what that means. And by the time she got to jail, she had four or five things attached to it, and there was no way she could get out. You know, she didn't have the money to make bonds. So it's curious to me, you know, to see someone who's there who can be really, truly a violent criminal right next to somebody who's just scared to death, you know, trying to figure out how they got there.
My guest today is Ellen Stackable. She's the program director for Poetic Justice. Poetic Justice is a program that's going into the David L. Moss Criminal Justice Center and working with the women that are incarcerated there. And they've created several anthologies of poetry for each class, but now they've actually published one for the public at large. It's called Poetic Justice. It's their first anthology, and it's hoping to raise funds to get this to more institutions, because it seems like, if I recall, there was somebody you actually taught at the jail who's now at a correctional center.
One of our students, we've been following her. She went from David O. Moss to Eddie Warrior, and we went to see her there, and now she's at Turley. And so we've been talking with the warden at Turley about starting a class there, too. And then we are also doing a class right now at the Divis Shelter. We just started that as well. So, you know, our goal ultimately is that this could be a class that every woman who's in prison in Oklahoma could take.
You know, what are you hearing as far as the takeaway from the women that are going through this?
Well, it's hard to track them a lot of times, because when they leave David O. Moss, some of them are homeless. Some of them go back home. Some of them go on to prison. Mm-hmm. And so we do an entrance and an exit survey, and those have been really, really positive as far as seeing the change. But it's hard, honestly, to track women once they leave. And I think our goal is that we could start a spark in them that would turn into a flame, you know, a spark of self-worth, of hope, of empowering. But it's hard to know.
And it might be about the writing itself, but it might be just that process you're going through in writing and getting feedback on your writing.
Yeah.
And creating a little self-worth, or, you know, more self-worth in the individual.
Well, and the ones we do see, you know, particularly the ones at David O. Moss, where we come back 12 weeks later to the pod and they're still there, they say, I have been writing. I've been writing. I write when I'm in lockdown. I write when I'm angry. I write when I'm depressed. It makes a difference. So that's really encouraging.
Yeah. Well, would you like to read us? You actually have a poem you read, right?
Yeah, it's one that we read to the women at graduation that I read. And it is about preconceptions that people have and who they really are. It's called To the Women of David L. Moss Criminal Justice Center, the Tulsa City Jail. They think that they know you, but they don't. They see orange, not pumpkin orange, not tangerine or sunlight orange or sunflower. They see hunter safety orange, construction orange, roadside orange, all one shade, top to bottom orange. They think they know you, but they don't. They see a number. They see screw up, mess up, dumb, ignorant, hardened, mean, broken, broken down, broken apart, broken in pieces. They think they know you, but they don't know. They don't know the fights you've survived, the children you love with all your heart, the thanks you give, the God you worship. They don't know the day you ran through the grass barefoot just to feel the softness between your toes, the time you sat outside late at night talking to friends and looking at the starry night, the Christmas dinners you ate, the stocking with your name on it, the presents you got, the presents you gave. They don't know that you love to watch the fireflies when they come early in the summer, that you watch the snow come down, and the time you played in it, even when you were so cold you couldn't feel your fingers. They don't know the books you read, the letters you write, the jokes you tell, the times you cry, the nights of prayer, your joys, your sorrows, your losses, and your victories. They don't know the burgers you eat, the coffee you drink, the ice cream cones, the chocolate bars, the steak and potatoes. And they sure don't know all the nights you stayed up because your baby was sick, the time you watched and cheered your kids and watched and cheered and watched and cheered until they won. You are brave. You are strong. You are fighters. You are overcomers. You are smart. You are writers and you are poets. You are funny and full of life. You are becoming free. Right here, right now, you are free. They see orange. I see freedom. I see life. I see beauty.
That's very nice. I get a sense of how this has affected you. How's this affected your own writing?
Well, I'd say it's fundamentally changed me as a person, honestly. It really has. I'm not afraid of much of anything anymore. Number one, it's become much easier for me to really be in the moment. As a teacher at TSAS and just in my own personal life, I feel I can draw myself in and focus in a way that I've never done before. And as a writer, I still love to write. And I think it's more than anything increased my sense that what I do as a teacher matters. You know, that it really does change my students' lives if they can learn to have their own voice and go into the world with that.
And what about these students at David L. Moss, where it's a very transient experience? You may see them one class, you may never see them again.
Yeah.
You may see them a couple of classes, two or three classes, and then all of a sudden, or maybe in the middle of that third class, they're gone.
Yeah.
Either released or sent to another facility.
I don't really have the ability to process it, honestly. It's an odd feeling because you feel like it takes seven layers to get into the classroom, you know, and each one of those layers going into the jail, there's slamming huge steel doors and there's one-way mirrors. And so you go through layer after layer after layer. So I feel like kind of like I'm going in the center of a hive when we go in. And then realizing, you know, that you're right, we may never see these women again. A few of them we've seen, you know, on the streets or working at Panera, or we met some at Women in Recovery, even the Divis shelter. But when we do, they always say the same thing. You know, I'm still writing.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do you find like that this becomes sort of a therapy for them in many ways? Not say therapy, but you know what I'm saying? Just sort of a release valve, if you will.
I'd say every class there's tears and laughter and cheering. I never anticipated, I think there's so many stereotypes of women, particularly, you know, with the TV show Orange is the New Black, you know, it casts a light that's just inaccurate. These women genuinely care about each other, and in the context of our class, they really have each other's back in an extraordinary way, and I didn't anticipate that.
Well, of course, you know, a lot of them are worried about their families on the outside, whether it's dependent children or other family members. And there's some really poignant pieces in here about sons that are not going to school, children they're trying to make amends for not being there. Just, you know, this feeling of guilt, of somewhat of shame, but of also of just fear of what they're missing on the outside in their family.
I think for a lot of them, they come from lives that have just been, I think their paradigm of life is that it's a huge storm. And knowing how to cope with that and love their children and try to make sense of their lives when they don't even have sort of the entry-level skills to do that. Incarceration in America and in Oklahoma is a huge problem.
Well, is there a poem you'd like to read from this collection that maybe sort of speaks to some of the things we've been talking about?
Well, this one really does give a picture. Panties Someone Already Wore.
Again, this is funny, but actually this is good. This poem changes like in about two lines.
Yeah. When this person first read it, we were just astounded. It kind of was an uproar in the pod when we read it. And this is from SP. Panties Someone Already Wore. The butt crack of dawn. I sleepwalk along in panties someone else wore before me. I stand in a line, smells like bad breath and ass. For orange grits and maybe some meat, then back to sleep for a few pleasant dreams. Wake up to the echoes. You stupid bitch. It's time to start the day. I shuffle along as new DOs shuffle. I laugh. I cry. I sing. I wait for the trays, fight off the strays, and pray to God we don't get . Then dinner comes on. This day almost gone. It's Alpo again with no sauce. 8 days and a shackle. No more Michelle's. No more noodles. Goodbye to David L. Moss.
Hmm. Strong piece. And it's that's one of the themes that shows up, this sort of idea of your life is not your own. You're incredibly bored most of the time if you're not scared at any given moment. But I think some of the most poignant poems are people who are just sort of taking that time they have and through writing, assessing where they are, maybe reassessing, maybe thinking about whatever circumstances, and sometimes it's well beyond their control, but sort of thinking about the circumstances where they ended up there. And it's not so much like some sort of confession or anything like that. It's just more of a sober reassessment. And they're writing this down, which is amazing.
We had one woman who was abused when she was 4 years old by an adult, and she had never talked about it and never really processed it until she wrote a poem for us. And she said, this hurts so much, but I feel so much better. So we talked to him a lot about the process of taking things that have been sealed up in your heart that are like festering sores, and that there's some kind of magic that happens when you put it on paper, because it's there and it's not in your heart in the way it used to be. And we've seen that over and over again.
Yeah, and I love the way she wrote about that, because it's oblique.
Yeah.
In the way, and it's just her interpretation. You know, it's oblique in the circumstances, but there was this one. It's referring to this man. It says, "Whatever made you think that a young little 4-year-old was attractive?" It was just really, really strong raw material.
Yeah.
My guest today is Ellen Stackable, Program Director for Poetic Justice. It's a program that is serving the women of David L. Moss, offering them a writing and poetry outlet. And they've been doing this for a while, but now they've published their first anthology for the general public, an anthology of poetry titled Poetic Justice. There'll be a book release party this Thursday evening at Dwelling Spaces, sponsored by Booksmart Tulsa. The reason for going to this full anthology, is it to raise money to continue this work, or was there sort of an idea of saying, you know, we're getting this great material, more than just our little class ought to see these little anthologies?
I think it was both and. We all volunteer our time, and the anthologies really do that we give out every 5 weeks cost something, so we've mostly just been doing that ourselves, but most of us aren't wealthy.
Teachers.
I'd say all of us, yeah, teachers, students. And then we realized, too, so it is a way to raise money. And the other part of it is that these women need a voice. I think the public needs to see that their preconceptions of women in prison are probably not accurate. And I think there's something that just dignifies the women by doing that. And it was funny because I was really concerned. I'm the one in the class, of the teachers. They say I'm the mom of the teachers because I'm always worrying about the details and are we doing this right? And I was worried about copyright stuff.
Right.
So Dr. Spoo, his kids go to our school, TSAS, and so I emailed him to check on that to make sure.
Yes, he's a copyright expert, yeah.
Right. And he said, you're okay as long as you have he wanted written permission. I said, that's not going to happen. These women are not going to sign something that I'm asked them to sign. They don't know what it's for. And he said verbal permission would be okay as long as I documented it. So that's what we've done.
So what was the reaction from women when you said we'd like to include this piece in a truly published anthology? Was it?
Well, these are ones that are past tense for the most part.
Right.
So what we told them was we may want to do an anthology at some point. Do we have your permission? And you know what they say, can you send one to my parents? Can you send one to my kids?
No.
You know, we want them to see that we are actually doing something with our lives.
Oh. From the money you raise, what do you hope to do? I know you want to expand to the Turley Correctional Center, right?
Right.
And that, I assume is that a larger facility or a smaller facility?
It's not huge. There's just a few hundred women there. It's a halfway house, so most of the women work during the day and then come back at night. So we'd like to expand there.
You're starting at you've already started the Divas shelter.
Yeah.
What's been the reaction there?
Well, it's really different because when you're there, these women, it's a safe space. It's a beautiful facility and really welcoming. But the stories that they have in some ways are more poignant and difficult than the women in the jail.
I would think it would be a little more raw just because it's just happened.
Yeah. I mean, there's people there that are in witness protection. There's people there that, have come to the United States just either from Russia or Egypt. And, we don't really get to know their stories in the same way. So we're just starting that out and we're trying to fit the class with the population that we have. We don't want to just have a one-size-fits-all class. So we feel like we're just pioneering there. And my passion has been, a lot of people have good ideas on how to change the world. And usually when their passion dies or they leave, that program dies. And I think because of things we've been through at TSAS, I just wanted to make sure that with Poetic Justice it was sustainable and that we could replicate it effectively. So that's the funds would go towards that, towards taking it to, Eddie Warrior, Mabel Bassett, Turley, and then maybe even some other programs, like Women in Recovery or something like that. So,
Now, you mentioned earlier that this has affected how you teach in your classroom at TSAS, the Tulsa School for Arts and Sciences. How has it affected your classroom teaching? Has it changed it in any way?
Yeah, I think I have more confidence as a teacher. I've never been, lacking in that necessarily.
That's my understanding.
But even more so, and it's tremendously fun to tell the kids, well, I won't be available tonight. I'll be in jail. It's really fun to be able to say that. And I think it's made me more convinced than ever of the power of writing to change lives. I think sometimes when you are an English teacher and you talk about the power of voice, people can look at you like you're talking about kind of pie in the sky. It doesn't make sense. But I feel like I have real life examples now that
you can see it.
Yeah.
You've experienced it. Yeah. Well, we wish you great success with it, Ellen. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Rich.
Ellen Stackable is the program director for Poetic Justice, a writing program for incarcerated women at the David L. Moss Criminal Justice Center. Their first anthology, by the same title, will have a book release party sponsored by Booksmart Tulsa Thursday evening at 7 o'clock at Dwelling Spaces. For information on the event, booksmarttulsa.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you'd like to catch up with some of our past episodes, the easiest way to do that is studiotulsa.org. You can look through our archives and listen to old programs on demand. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.